Welcome to Town Square. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. Our weekly conversations always include you, and if you'd like to join us, the phone lines are open. Here's the number if you're on Oahu. It's 941-3689. And if you call us from the neighbor islands or anywhere else you may be listening to the live stream, it's 877-941-3689. Right now, many teachers are being observed or are having their post-evaluation conferences. This is the first year the evaluations are being widely used following the pilot last school year. The educator evaluation system has been in development over the last 2 years, and an overwhelming majority of teachers don't believe that it's helping their teaching or say they even understand it, according to a recent study. Maybe that includes you. Tonight, we're going to talk with a panel of teachers about the brouhaha over the Educator Effectiveness System evaluations and what it means for the future of public schools and kids in Hawaii. Joining us tonight, Campbell High School nationally certified social studies teacher Corey Rosenley, Mililani High School Social Studies Department Chair Amy Peruso, and by phone, Jessica Kerber, technology coordinator and computer teacher at Hanalei Elementary School. And from Maui, King Kamehameha III Elementary School, third grade special education teacher, Justin Huey. And again, if you're a teacher, we want to hear from you. Our number is 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Welcome to all of you.
Hello.
Thank you.
Hello.
Oh, good. Glad that you're all there. Okay. You know, since the whole discussion about the evaluation came into the general consciousness, we've been having conversations to look at what is it, what does it do, and how will teachers be able to cope with it, and will in effect make for better teaching. Over the last 2 years, we've gotten a lot of negative feedback. We've heard a lot of people talking in the public sphere about all of this, but there are undoubtedly folks who have not been paying attention to what this evaluation is all about. So let's catch everybody up a little bit and talk about what this thing does, how it measures. And Corey, I'm going to start with you because there are five metrics to all of this, and I'll let you pick it up from there.
Okay. So the question, you know, we always have to ask is, why are we doing this? And most teachers believe it is not improving their teaching, and it is not. You know, I think that the big question we have to ask is why. And a lot of teachers at this point are basically feeling like, you know, we're not looking at the real reasons why we're doing evaluations to improve teaching quality. You know, people say that, well, if we do this, we can fire all the bad teachers. But the reality is that this is about an input, not an output. And in Hawaii, teachers, you know, we teach in these hot, crowded classrooms, 40 kids. We're buying our own supplies, lowest paid in the nation if you do cost of living. And we have the highest teacher turnover rate in the nation. And so what's happening is every year we can't find enough teachers. You know, 70% of all of our new teachers are emergency hires. And so we're not creating an environment that we want to keep good teachers. And this evaluation system is only going to make it worse. It's taking good teachers and stressing them out and overburdening them.
Okay, I mean, that's your take on it. But in terms of what the evaluation looks at, five different areas. You're looking at having somebody in the classroom
to observe your behavior. It's core professionalism, observations, tripod surveys, student learning outcomes, And student growth. And the tests.
And working portfolios for the non-classroom teachers.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. So in each of those areas, a teacher is expected to accumulate data over the entire year and then be able to obviously sit down and have a conversation about this, presumably with the idea of trying to increase and better one's teaching. But from what we've heard from many teachers is that, in fact, this is thwarting their teaching.
Well,
Amy?
Yeah, can I jump in there real quick?
Sure, go ahead, Justin.
Hi. One of the biggest things, one of the biggest problems here is time. Time. And so with the PEPT, once you were tenured, you would only be observed, go through observation, I believe it was once every 5 years. And now it's every single teacher at the school has to have a pre-observation, an observation, and a post-observation twice a year. So, you know, my principal flat out told me, you know, why'd you guys agree to this? We didn't agree to this. And, you know, there's just no time for it. I mean, before the evaluation system, everybody, the principals had way too much on their plate. The principal should be going around, looking around what's going on in the classrooms. and they're just buried. And that was before the evaluation system. And now they have to go in and observe each person, again, pre-observation, the observation, post-observation, and your final year checkout, your SLOs, your core observation. I mean, it's just, you know, there's a common theme of, you know, what mandatory meeting did we miss today? And it's just, you know, the problem is that the DOE took something that was going across the country and just said, let's just throw all of this up against the wall and see what sticks, at the expense of principals, teachers, and more importantly, the students. And
Justin,
the biggest thing is that it takes away instructional time. So all of this time to do all of this paperwork to justify the fact that you are a teacher, that you're proficient, and you're taking away time that you're supposed to be used, that you're using, that normally you're using,
and also
time for
kids
for your instruction.
Yeah, and also time that the kids have to evaluate each and every teacher.
Yeah, tripod. Yeah, that's pretty funny. Especially
well, that's why I wanted you to explain that, because you all know what the word tripod means, but for most people listening, that it has to do with students actually evaluating. And obviously, there's been some criticism about, can a child as young as five be able to evaluate a teacher effectively? And, you know, what kind of language does a child have to be able to understand that? Different words mean different things and have different shades of meaning for children at different levels. But you brought up something a second ago as you were talking. You said that your principal said to you, why did you all agree to this? And saying that, you know, principals hadn't agreed to this kind of a thing. Why did you?
Well, that's a tough question.
I'd like to speak.
There was a lot of tentative agreements. There was a lot that wasn't there. And most of the teachers that I know and I've talked to, it's real simple, is that we were under furloughs, and which turned into directed leave without pay. And when it comes down to it, it was pay. It was, hey,
it was,
you're
going to
get more money, and that your health benefits are going to go back to where they were previously. And, you know, the teachers in Hawaii are paid, when factored in the cost of living, are paid the least amount in the country. We rank dead last in that area, and it's real, you know, that was the thing. We felt, a lot of people felt, that there was enough safeguards in place to ensure that this was going to be a reliable, fair, and equitable system, and that we were going to finally have a contract where we were under the first ever last best final offer.
Okay, hold on there for a second, because I want to get Amy into this too, because you had an answer for why did you agree to this.
Well, I think that his answer is correct, but just kind of a broader historical analysis. I think that teachers have been demonized and kind of scapegoated, actually, ever since the Nation at Risk report came out in 1983 that kind of identified a manufactured crisis in test scores for U.S. Students. And it was easy to identify a single group as a source of the problem. And I think that our union, along with other national unions and local unions, felt marginalized and weakened by this constant barrage and attack. And you can see that still in the public media and in popular culture. You know, if you have a TV series called Bad Teacher, and you have a movie called Bad Teacher, and they kind of thrive and ride off of this negative public sentiment, you have to ask, where is this coming from, and what public policy purposes does it serve?
Well, hopefully, because it's a bad show, it'll be off pretty soon. But your point is well taken, Corey.
And this is what I'd like to say, if the superintendent and the Board of Education is listening to this, if you truly care about your teachers and your teachers are stressed and they do not like this, go back to the contract. Open it up about evaluations if you truly care about our voices. If not, they don't care about their teachers. And so this is what I'm saying. Let us negotiate the contract on evaluations separately so that teachers can truly put down how they feel about it.
All right.
Yes. I just want to jump in real quick on the union issue.
All right, Jessica, go ahead.
Hi, thanks. I know from my experience last year when this new contract finally we agreed, you know, this came to the table, our union rep came and totally supported it, said this is the best you're ever going to get. You know, really kind of scared some teachers into thinking, like,
yeah,
oh, if we don't do
exactly.
this, we're going to go on strike, and they have mortgages and families that they have to support. So a lot of them were almost scared into it. I myself didn't vote for it because I knew this evaluation system was going to be a sticking point. And as much as they told us that this was going to have all stakeholders at the table, don't worry, it won't be finalized until teachers approve of it. Don't worry, don't worry, don't worry. That was the message that was being sent loud and clear by every union rep that came to our school mm-hmm. or that I had seen speak. So I felt completely misled, still voted no. And then this year, as we see it all play out, everybody's wondering, why is this going on? Why aren't our voices being heard? And I've called the union rep. I've talked to our union president. And they completely agree with what we're going through. You know, they sympathize with us. They say it. But then they tell us, well, you're the ones who signed the contract, and this contract says that it has to go through the joint committee, and that's the only thing we can do. We can't file grievance. They're stopping our suits that we file. Mm-hmm. Our own union is. And if the union's not there to support their teachers, I don't know what they're there for. I honestly feel so let down and frustrated by the lack of support and lack of care and concern for teachers. When I tell you that I've had teachers come into my room, because it's kind of a little bit of a safe haven, in tears, breakdown. I had a teacher tell me yesterday after another training from a district person about core professionalism, because that's due, you know, breakdown in tears and said she literally was thinking about driving herself to the nearest mental hospital, no joking, because she felt like she was going to have a nervous breakdown. I mean, it's serious. There are health implications because of this, and I don't mean to dramatize it at all.
I'm watching heads nod around the table here as if this is a situation. Have you had this experience, Corey?
I've had teachers come up to me crying, and I've had to console them, you know, and teachers stressed out, and teachers saying they're going to quit, and teachers saying, I don't need this. One of the biggest stressors in life is being held accountable for something beyond your control. Mm-hmm. And when you have something like a test, it does, like, I love this one. I had a student that showed up for the first day on the test day, and they count that against you, mm-hmm. you know. I am not accountable if a kid didn't get sleep that night. Mm-hmm. If the, you know, they've only shown up to school three times. But when we hold teachers accountable, they're getting stressed out by this because they cannot control those factors.
And Justin, can you jump in here for a second?
Yeah, definitely.
Because you had a meeting with a lot of teachers yesterday.
Yes, we had a forum at my Waianae Intermediate School in Maui where we had. Before I jump into that, I am seeing a lot of teachers under so much stress that they're and administrators that they're shaking, that they're crying. Yesterday at the forum, we did have a teacher crying in front of Representative Justin Woodson talking about the EES system. Another person, we had about 300 people show up. It was a forum to talk about the evaluation system, and Alvin. Shima, the Baldwin Complex superintendent, was quick to say to a very emotional crowd, we aren't the enemy, and they are aware of many of the concerns and agree that there are many areas to be concerned about, but, you know, it didn't really go over too well, and there was a lot of shouting and a lot of yelling, and people were very upset. But, I mean, this is the first year where I see teachers taking sick days to come in to get a substitute, or not sick days, but personal days, to get a substitute just to come in and fill out all this extra work that they have to do. And I do know other teachers that are, I mean, it's kind of like the Postal Service, you know, in like the 80s. The people are so, our teachers are spread so thin. It's just a bad climate. And even at my school, which seems to be, I feel, is one of the better schools as far as it's the feel of the school. Everyone respects each other, and it's not too strong-handed as far as, you know, administration coming down on people extremely hard. But yesterday was really interesting. You know, the whole thing with the Charlotte Danielson system, first, is that it was never designed to be an evaluation tool leading to termination. It was created to be a support for teachers and to help teachers. And Charlotte Danielson herself said that she feared that if it was used as an evaluation tool by school districts, that they would be sued over it. And at the elementaries, right now, who wants to be a fourth or fifth grade teacher? Because whether or not the school passes or not on the for the year is based on the fourth and fifth grade teachers showing growth, you know, which stems from growth from kindergarten, first grade, second grade, third grade, you know, up fourth grade. But the test scores of the fourth and fifth grade teachers are what is counted on for the school to pass. And those teachers feel that it's discriminatory because their student growth percentile of how much growth that they were able to do is used as 25% towards their grade, where kindergarten through third grade teachers are not.
All right, we're going to just take a small break here and bring in some of our callers who have been waiting very patiently to enter into this conversation. Joe, a teacher calling us from Maui. Aloha, and thank you for your patience.
I just want to ask, who is the best at assessing the quality of a teacher? An internet web form or a living, breathing human being? And right now, the EES system, I believe, takes individual human beings out of the picture and replaces it with an internet web form that breaks all the time. I mean, sometimes you can spend a whole hour entering data the right way, and then you learn that it's all been erased. So you have to spend another hour doing this. Before, the principal used to come in and talk to you about how you did. Oh, you should try this. Or they might say, oh, that was bad. Maybe you can do this better. But now everything is sanitized, and it feels like you ask the administration, how did I do? And it's almost like as if they're not allowed to tell you how you did because the internet web form is the overseer.
And Joe, can I ask you a question, though? What about when you actually have someone come in and obviously you've got a living, breathing person there doing the evaluation? They've got to walk into your classroom. You have to have some conversation afterward about that. Boy, I just watched Amy say, wait, I got to talk about this. Amy, how about answering that question? What happens when you have this living, breathing person in there? Joe says there's not enough interaction. Hmm. What happens when you actually get that part, which obviously is quite human?
I think that actually this is one element of the system that punishes teachers that work with students who struggle, and other components do as well. But in particular, what the Danielson evaluation system or framework really emphasizes is discourse and critical thinking and questioning. And when you have students who struggle with the basics and they're not able to evidence that kind of discourse or engagement, and they're not questioning, and they're not monitoring themselves, then your score goes down. So essentially, the teachers who are the most gifted at working with our students who struggle will be punished for engaging in that work, which is patently unfair and bad for the system, because then those teachers will seek to teach other kinds of students, or leave the system, and that's bad for all of us.
Are they throwing them perhaps into the arms of better schools or into schools, private schools?
Potentially, yes.
Corey. And so, one of the things that we could really improve is, as a teacher, you want to improve. The second they add on whether you're going to be fired or get this bonus for it, it changes the attitude. Instead of putting on a lesson that I might want to get a VP's view back and how I can improve, I'm putting on a show. Mm-hmm. And I actually changed around my lessons to do this.
A dog and pony show, some would call it if they were in sales.
Even the SLOs. Everyone's gaming the system so they can pass. Mm-hmm. I got dinged on my evaluation because, get this, my kids were all well-behaved. And to get a 4, someone had to misbehave and another student had to correct them.
So there's a prescription of what has
exactly.
to happen.
Exactly. They have
for
to follow
to
all of these things.
Not really observing what's happened.
Right. So you're almost thinking in your head as you're doing this thing, what's the check marks? Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So you're having to put on a show instead of really thinking about what can I do to improve my teaching.
Right. All right. Let's go off now to Matt calling us from Waialua. Aloha, Matt. Welcome to Town Square.
Hi. How you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
A pleasure.
I just had a couple comments. I'm a teacher, and I just think it's non-promotional, and what I mean by that is if I have student teachers in my classroom, which I often do, it's very difficult to give up the helm to them and have their, their scoring, so to speak, or whatever their achievement is, be reflective on my SLO, it could last a whole semester. So, and also, it doesn't allow for homogeneous mixing. In other words, I can't take other teachers' students for a big reading block if we were to split students up by ability, if that's our best practice, because, of course, then their scores are reflective on how well I do in my classroom. So it's isolative in that point. And then also, there's also a lot of people at the school that affect the children. And it's like a raise a village, takes a village, you know, kind of mentality.
And I would say,
if you isolate each other, it's very difficult to work for one another when you're flying solo, so to speak.
Amy wants to answer you. Go ahead.
I would say it, not just in the school, but in the whole community, right? So basically, the system not only sets up a competition between teachers and divides them against each other, which makes for a non-collaborative workplace, but it also kind of, in a sense, pits parents against teachers, or it creates a very kind of hostile relationship with the community, where you're kind of contributing to a sense of attack.
The tripod survey results, even the tripod survey results, they're curved. So teachers, believe it or not, you have 80%, because you're compared to other teachers, 80% could be a failing grade. So instead of just looking at whether you're getting a passing grade, those tripod surveys that the students answer are actually curved.
Okay, everything that you have all said up to this point is that this thing doesn't work. It doesn't really measure reality. There have to be shows that people put on. Hang on a second, see if I've got all this list going here. That this isn't something that's a helpful tool in getting better in teaching or being able to really represent how teaching is happening in a given classroom that's relevant to other teachers in other classrooms. All of that put together seems to suggest that this thing clearly isn't working for you, but having, you know, heard at least from a couple of teachers now who say, hey, we can't, you know, we can't bring suit, we can't do very much, we're hamstrung in this. Do you see yourselves having any sort of avenue beyond simply just getting out of it? Justin?
Jessica.
Or Jessica?
Hi. Yes, I've pursued, you know, I've gone through the union and I organized all my teachers to say, you know, we're not going to do any more of this. And I got every single one of my faculty members to agree to just stop cold turkey, not do any more work, not do any more observations, just totally flunk to send a message. I quickly got a call from my union rep saying you cannot suggest that you do that because if you fail this year, it does count. And that's another thing that we were misled by both district, by our administrators, and by our union. We were told this year was a trial year or a pilot year. Very incorrect. This is a real year. It will go on everyone's permanent record. So therefore, teachers were then scared, and, you know, obviously I had to think twice about it too, and are in this mad rush to finish things. So that was, you know, put the kibosh on. And so I asked my union, what can we do? And he said, oh, start a petition maybe. So that's what I did, called the union again. Well, can you support this petition? No, we cannot support or endorse it. You know, so they have no support there, even though I've gone through and gotten, you know, support on the petition. That seems to be the only avenue because everything needs to go through this joint committee, which hasn't done one thing yet so far. So here we are in May. This hasn't been working all year. We've all probably voiced our concerns to our administrators and our superintendents. I know I have, and they've, you know, said they've heard me and I've seen them face-to-face. But then we're kind of at this dead end because of this contract issue, and that's all I keep being told. And the more I dig deeper into it, the uglier it is and the more bound to it we are. And my administrator yesterday said nothing's going to change next year. That's the message that we're hearing.
I mean,
so
I mean
very
that's
discouraging.
I mean, from what you've just said, that's not very good news, and it certainly sounds as if you don't really have any recourse. And from the way that you've positioned that, it sounds as if your own union is, as Justin said a little earlier, sort of the enemy. Is that how you view them?
I feel that way. And looking back, this was piloted, a real pilot, in 81 schools across the state before it came out to us this year. And there was red flags all over the place with it then, and nothing was changed, and they still threw it at us, just as sloppy as they had unrolled the pilot to the other schools. across the state.
And do you agree that the reason why teachers voted for this was because they thought that there was no other way of being able to dissociate that from the money?
Correct. That's my feeling.
Can I make a correction?
Sure, go ahead.
Hey, I didn't say that the union was the enemy. But I do want to state, though, that, you know, I do have my own frustrations, but there is an opportunity here. We do have June 6th. The state superintendent will make the final EES decisions to the Hawaii Board of Education.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a big thing last night, was that there is they are collecting information on what happened this year, and that, you know, people should try to, I guess, contact the superintendent and the Board of Ed and tell them how they feel, because they can make changes. This is a pilot. They can change the pilot. They can make changes to this. Whether or not they do that, I don't know. And when it comes into the union's involvement, yes, the union does, there is a joint committee, and they do are allowed to voice all of these teacher concerns. But honestly, the problem with it is that I don't see them, me personally, as having much power. You know, this whole system was not very collaborative from the beginning. It was presented to the union simply with the system to that you could go along with it, and then you'd be allowed to comment in a joint committee. So there is something called consult and confer. So the teachers that are appointed to the joint committee can say anything they want, you know, have their voices heard, but
it doesn't necessarily result in any action, is what I'm hearing you say. Hang on a second. I want to get Corey into this, too. Corey Rosenberg.
I mean, the problem that existed is the contract that we signed was so prescriptive that it doesn't give the union much flexibility. You know, it goes over each of the parts of the – it doesn't say we have to have an evaluation. It goes over each part of these. And so, you know, the real power it comes down to is the superintendent and the Board of Education. And we've just spent the last 25 minutes talking about the stress that it's causing to teachers, how teachers are rebelling. And the question you throw back into their court is, do they care? And if they do care about their teachers, are they good managers? Then do the right thing. Open up the contract on this issue and let us go back and look at what it's really going to do to improve teaching. And as long as it's up to them, they're ignoring us. And that's where a lot of frustration comes into.
All right, very, very quickly, Amy, because I want to get to more callers.
Okay, go to callers.
Okay, all right, then we'll pick this up in a second, no doubt. Going to Dania, calling us from Hawaii Island. Aloha, and thank you for your patience.
Aloha, thank you so much for taking the time to hear us today.
A pleasure, go ahead.
My major concern throughout all of this is that a common misconception has been that teachers don't want to be evaluated.
Mm-hmm.
That couldn't be farther from the truth for me personally. When we were asked to look at the contract, and one of my major concerns at the time was that they didn't tell us what tool they would be using to evaluate mm-hmm. us. And that was what I consistently mentioned during these meetings. And so now when we have this tool that's being used and we see it as being, you know, ineffective, it seems as though in our trainings as teachers, we are constantly told that if a lesson is not working, we immediately change course and make sure that we are moving to a lesson that will be effective for our students. And so here we have professionals, teachers who have bachelor's and master's and doctorates who are not being valued as professionals, and their opinions aren't being heard, that this system is not working for us. We want to be evaluated, but it needs to be a fair measurement.
You also seem to be bringing up the point that this is very inconsistent policy, that what you would be doing in the classroom to make it actually better for your students, if a lesson isn't working, you move to something that you believe will work, that same idea should be running through what happens with the evaluation process.
That's correct. I agree with that. And the fact that it's taking so long to make these changes is just not good practice. I'm a kindergarten teacher, and the tripod survey itself, which was just a nightmare. My students were out of the classroom, missing out on valuable instructional time to take the survey for 2 hours, 5- and 6-year-olds being asked double negative questions to rate my effectiveness as a teacher.
Well, that's why I was asking earlier in the show about, you know, the language that's used and what a 5- or 6-year-old may understand with certain words that like the word push that has very, very physical connotations to a child, as opposed to, well, does someone encourage you to do something? You know, that
well, not just that, it also has the word disagree. It also has a series of questions of, do you disagree with this statement, which
totally throws off.
Yeah, little kids aren't good with statements like that.
It's not developmentally appropriate language. Even the word encourage is difficult for 5 or 6 year olds who haven't maybe even had any exposure to school before entering kindergarten.
Right, and I wasn't suggesting that word be used. Just that we have different meanings for words that, as adults, we easily identify, but for a child, it's much, much tougher. Dania, thank you so much for calling. Glad to hear
from Hawaii. Thank you, everyone who's there.
So I'll speak this one as a parent. I have a 10-year-old daughter, goes to elementary school, and one of the questions asked about the control. And so she answered as a 10-year-old would about what she sees in a classroom. And the teacher gets back the scores and says, you know what? You know, now you guys rated me lower on this one. Now I'm going to have to be much stricter on you. And so now the idea is, next time the tripod survey comes up, she, you know, doesn't want this mean teacher. She's going to evaluate it this way. And I don't want my 10-year-old deciding, you know, what kind of teaching is. As one elementary school teacher, you know, a child should not be able to decide whether I can pay rent this month. You know, and that's exactly as the case may be right now.
Or what is the best teaching method to be able to reach a child because they're children? Okay, 941-3689 is our number, 941-3689. If you're on Oahu, use that one. If you're calling us from the neighbor islands or anywhere else you may be listening to the live stream, you can get to us toll free at 877-941-3689. We want to hear from you. And if you think that this evaluation is a good thing, we want to hear from you too. You know, and not everybody agrees about this. Certainly there's a majority that says they don't think this is a good thing, but all opinions are welcome. We want to hear from you, but just you need to tell us why by giving us a call, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going now to Darissa calling us from Lahaina.
Hi, I also want to thank you for your time and hearing our voices. And I just want to start out by saying I was also at that forum on Maui last night. And, you know, I went hoping that I would have my voice heard and I had to write my questions on note cards. And then the people on the panel were able to cherry pick which note cards and said, you know, they wanted to address until time ran out. So I just feel very impressed. As far as having a voice with this whole new EES system, and I've been teaching 8 years, and I also believe that I'm at a very good school. But I feel like our teachers and our principals, including myself, are getting so bogged down with all of the requirements that do my students suffer? Does my daughter, who's in the same school, suffer? I'm picking up my daughter at about 5 o'clock, anywhere from 5 to 5:30 from the after school program. I don't want to, you know, because of these requirements, pick her up at 7:30, but I also don't want to give my students busy work so I can fill out all these forms and templates and reflections. And, well, there's only 8 pre-observation questions. Well, 8 times, you know, some of them have 4 parts. If they all had 4 parts, it'd be 32 questions. But my biggest problem is it's time consuming. There's a lot of and I feel like it's all form.
And forgive me for cutting you off on this, but
I don't have buy-in. I don't believe in this educational effectiveness system. I believe it's hurting my students.
All right, can I stop? Let me stop you right there because hang on a second. We're hearing a lot of the same things from a lot of teachers, and I don't want to stop you from talking about that. It's just that we only have so much time, and what we've gotten from a lot of teachers so far is that this is inordinately time-consuming and that it's not helping them to become better teachers, that it's fostering a great deal of discord and antipathy, and this is not appropriate for a child to be involved in any sort of evaluation process, particularly for very, very young children. These themes that keep coming over and over again, at the same time I'm hearing you say, there aren't really any avenues for us to do anything. We're feeling powerless. A lot of teachers are deciding that perhaps they don't want to be teachers anymore, even if they initially love the profession. And that has a lot of people who may be parents and just community members wondering, you know, what is this going to mean if, for example, a great deal of teachers, a great many of them decide, they're going to simply leave the profession because already we're having to import teachers, whether they're, you know, Teach for America or others who are brought in short term. What does this mean for teachers and for students and for schools? Amy.
I think that this is a really important question because I think that schools are the centers of our communities. And I think that the nature of the community at the school informs the rest of the community. So the extent to which there's animosity and hostility and all of these negative things happening at the schools, and it affects a larger community. So I've seen, and I know that there are parents at who are also teachers who are opting their children out of the tripod and opting their children out of the tests. And I know teachers who are risking their jobs and refusing to complete the educator evaluation process. And I think that that is an indication of where we've come to. And I think that the lack of responsiveness on the part of the state and on the part of our union to the radicalness of these kinds of responses, it shows a certain kind of tone deafness that is really dangerous because it's going to have a long-lasting effect on our school system for the state and in our communities if we don't address this.
Yeah, I mean, that's the overall part of it, but some practical applications of that, Corey, if we're looking at a lot of teachers who are greatly unhappy and for whatever reason, I mean, you've already articulated a lot of those reasons, decide to leave the profession, what happens?
Well, what we already have in Hawaii is a great inequality. You know, we have the highest rate of private school attendance in the nation by far.
And many teachers who are in the public school system who put their kids into private schools.
And many politicians as well. And the idea is you have to look around, what should we do? And if you look at the best countries around the world, you know, Finland, Singapore, South
Finland's
Korea.
Finland's at the top of the list.
They recruit from the best teachers. In Finland, only 10% of all teacher applicants even get into teaching. For 6 years, they train them. Their turnover rate is 1 to 2% a year. Hawaii, it's 11% a year, 56% every 5 years. You know, and so what they do very differently is they pay their teachers well, they treat them like professionals, and they let them teach. And in Finland, the evaluation system is at the end of the year, the principal gets together with the teachers, and they have a discussion of how the teacher can improve. You know, this is very different than what we're doing here.
All right, we're going to take some more callers who want to talk to you. Going now to Aaron, calling us from Kailua Kona. Aloha, Aaron. Welcome to Town Square.
Aloha, and thank you for hearing the teachers. I want to thank everyone as well. I just wanted to go back to the time really quickly and talk about, I know it's important that the principals don't have enough time, but I think it's important to think of what best practice is for teaching, and it is giving a lesson, reflecting on that lesson, and making improvements the next day. But if I'm required to do all of the things that the EES is expecting of me, I don't have that time to reflect and to make those changes. So therefore, I'm just keeping my head afloat, going in the next day, doing my best without reflecting, without meeting individual students' needs. And I think that this is going to hurt our education, not help it. I also wanted to talk very quickly about the tripod survey, having administered it this year and seeing students just arbitrarily make answers, not really able to read the questions, but just picking an answer, so I know that they can be inaccurate. But I don't know if parents realize they can actually sign a form that says their students don't have to take the tripod survey. But unfortunately, the way that works is we send the form home, and if it doesn't come back signed, the student takes the tripod survey. And I think if more parents in the community and more community members got involved and back teachers and came in and saw what was required of this evaluation, I think that they would support us 100%. I think it's too time-consuming.
And Aaron, forgive me for cutting you off on that, but I've got people behind you who want to say some other things, too. And I think that the point about timing is one that we've heard several points. But your point about parents being able to opt their kids out from the tripod survey.
And testing, too.
And testing is very important.
And the testing. And I think which is allowed by the
Elementary Secondary Education Act, does allow parents to opt their kids out of high-stake testing, but the parents are never informed of their rights.
And in New York, there's a big revolt going on right now where teachers are opting out. So you see this revolt occurring, you know, so maybe this is something that does need to occur as well.
And now we're going to go on to Cecily, calling us from Eva Beach. Aloha, Cecily. Welcome to Town Square.
Aloha. I really appreciate you taking my call. I'm a teacher. I'm a veteran, 20-year teacher, but not necessarily all the years here in Hawaii. So I apologize if I'm touching on a subject that has already been touched on as well. I came in late. But I'm calling because I have a memory of reading the contract last year when we had to sign it or not sign it that said 50% of our pay will be based on student improvement. And student improvement for special ed students, which are mine, is very random and not really a secure thing because students can click on a test and click through something without really even trying, and they can get a variable score. And so I have been questioning since last year what assessment that people would be that the state would be using to evaluate our student improvements. And for HSA, you know, I understand that for typical kids that take HSAs, my kids never pass an HSA. No offense to my kids, but they really struggle. So improvement for them is also just clicking through something that they hope they do well. That's not improvement.
What's a different? It's also a different.
Are they basing our pay on something that's very random? And no one has ever answered this question. What are they going to use as an assessment?
Cecil, you're bringing up a whole point about, you know, a different level of improvement. What does that really mean? That it's an improvement is not improvement is not improvement across the board, because you're talking about kids with special needs and perhaps a different rubric that needs to be used. Corey.
And this one is driving me crazy. Again, as a parent, we've become testing centers.
Right.
My daughter goes to math in the morning, reading in the afternoons. She couldn't go to the library because it was taking away time. Teachers aren't able to take field trips anymore. Everything's based on those test scores. And so if she's a smart kid, she's irrelevant anymore because they know they're going to pass it. So all we care now is whether these kids can pass the test. Things like art, music, mm-hmm. you know, all of these Hawaiian, all of these great things are being cut out of it because now all that matters are these test scores. And now that schools and teachers are going to be evaluated on it, it's further narrowing the curriculum, and it's actually going to hurt these kids in the future.
And can I just add, I proctor the HSA test for all of the students at my school, grade 3 through 6.
This is Jessica. I just want to remind everybody.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I see the immense stress that these kids are under. Literally watch them get frustrated, you know, cry, you know, get so upset when they see that score at the end and it's not the magic 300 number. And I just try to explain to them that that's not, you know, what's important is a small piece of the pie, and just trying to talk them down as they leave the room so upset and so discouraged. And it's heartbreaking as a parent and as an educator to see that. And I also have been a special education teacher before I became the tech coordinator. And so I struggled for 2 years with my group of special ed students because they did not take these tests well, and it never proved how hard they had been working all year in class. And again, they're, you know, part of the group, and their score, you know, never passed, and the teacher, you know, would ask me what can they do, and it's just that's such a small piece of the puzzle, and people are forgetting that students are human breathing beings that need to be taught in a well whole-rounded approach, not just a test or a survey.
All right, Jessica, hang on to that for a second. We're going to take some more callers. If you want to join us, call us sooner rather than later, 941-3689. If you're on Oahu, that's the number to use, 941-3689. And from the neighbor islands, 877-941-3689. Going now to Chris calling us from Kula. Aloha, Chris. Welcome to Town Square.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment as a parent that I would really like to see an evaluation by the teachers in regards to these standardized tests.
Yeah.
And especially with the core
Common Core
program that they're pushing, and then maybe they could compare and contrast all the teachers and the comments that they are making and criticizing the tests for. I mean, for instance, there's a fantastic math teacher here in Kula who's at the end of her rope with how illogical the math is being taught to the students in fifth grade, and it's almost as if they're trying to, you know, complicate it so much that it can't be taught. So I'd really, as a parent, really like to have evaluations on these tests by the teachers, and somehow that we, the parents, can see what, you know, how they feel in regards to these tests, which everyone knows is ruining our public schools.
Okay, Chris, I'm going to stop you right there for a second because you've made a couple of points here. One, She's saying that in the way in which some of the stuff is being taught, and Cora, you echoed that a moment ago too, that really in some cases we're setting up kids to fail, mm-hmm. and we're setting up teachers to fail. But she also says that she'd like to see a teacher-driven evaluation of all of this that's collected that parents could be able to look around and share. Because there have been op-eds, there have been pieces written in all over places, but to go point by point and to have a collective, that's a great amount of work. Amy?
I think that actually that speaks to another issue. It's that all of this is being produced and imposed from outside by non-educators. And I think that that is one way in which teachers can kind of reassert their professionalism is to not only evaluate the tests, but insist that we are the ones who are writing them. Because you cannot disconnect curriculum from testing and assessment. And that's what's happening. So these tests are being imposed from outside when really they should be part of an organic process.
And the curriculum, too.
Yeah.
So reflecting what's actually happening.
Correct. And I think that that's a really important point because that will help teachers reconnect what they're teaching, what they're assessing to their practices.
And to the kids that they're teaching.
Exactly.
All right. We're going to go now to Bob calling us from Hawaii Island. Aloha, Bob. Thanks for your patience.
Aloha. I just want to make a couple points that may or reinforce some points that are made. First of all, one is that the tripod designed by Harvard, as I believe, was never to be designed. It was never designed to be an assessment tool.
I should tell you that was covered a little bit earlier in the show.
And the same thing with Danielson also. Mm-hmm. I want to reinforce that. And the thing is that HSTA really did not have a say in the selection of these tools. When the Joint Committee sat down, they said, boom, here they are. And that was what it is. And in particular with the tripod, the one that got my goat, was that the neutrals, you know, you have favorable, wonderful, neutral, not happening, and never saw it kind of answers, and the neutrals don't even count. Hmm. So my students, when I talk to them about the tripod afterwards, they go, oh, mister, we didn't really want to cause trouble, so I just, like, put neutral for everything. You know, I didn't want to say one way or the other. I didn't, and they were done in, like, 10 minutes.
Well, but that also speaks to where some of the kids are emotionally. That has nothing to do with their ability to really
Absolutely.
Rate it. Because they know who's a good teacher. They know really what's happening in some ways. But not wanting to cause trouble is a whole other issue.
Yeah. Now, the other thing, the thing I want to get to, which I think is the real meat and potatoes of this, is, you know, it's clear that we have trouble in the kitchen. But the problem is we're fixing the refrigerator when the stove is broke. And what's going on is, in education, you get what you pay for. The legislature has been stealing from our Keiki's future for years. This is not a new activity. And, you know, you can't give a quality education if you're, you know, it's like you can't drink champagne on a beer diet. You know, it's just, and so it's like you got to call up the legislators and say, hey, what's going on? How come you're not funding our kids' future?
Okay.
And let's hold their feet to the fire. Let's ask the question, why are we the worst funded of all the states? Why?
You know what, Bob? Those questions have been asked for quite a while. The question is, what is anybody going to do about that in a constructive way that's going to be able to move the agenda forward? Which means I got to ask you guys, how do you feel about the superintendent getting a raise?
Oh.
Go ahead, Corey.
Yeah, that makes me feel sick.
I wish
we could do a tripod survey on her.
They use the mentality. The argument was is that we need to pay the superintendent more in order to keep, you know, and level
parity with other states.
With other districts of the same thing. Great. Do the same thing for teachers. But what frustrated me so much this year was when the senator and representative couldn't find the right room, and so they killed a whole slew of education bills, including air conditioning for kids. They could open it up for superintendent salary. Teachers are losing money because the National Certification Board teachers, mm-hmm. they're not going to get their pay raise because that was a bill that died. Mm-hmm. So the superintendent, they opened it up to pay her more. But I'm going to lose $5,000 this year as a teacher because they couldn't find the right room. Mm-hmm. And there are many teachers that are angry about that. So we can find money for her, but we can't find money more for teachers, and we can't find more money for air conditioning for kids.
All right, we're going to go now and take a few more callers. Going to go to Zori calling us from Kailua Kona. Aloha, Zori. Thanks for the call, and thanks for your patience.
Aloha. Thank you for bringing such a critical issue, and you can see the level of emotion and the level of participation, and I hope that your initiation of this process is going to be followed by more public and media support for the teachers. One of the first interjections that I had was that although our union may not seem as effective, if you take a look at states that have lost their union, teachers absolutely have no right.
Mm-hmm.
And a tenured teacher, veteran teachers of 17 to 18 years could be just let go. So let's count our blessings on that part. The second part is that I have not seen really very many teachers who are against evaluation, but we need to have an evaluation system that is logical, that is methodical, that is pointed as far as professional development is concerned. Malaysia, for example, the salary of a beginning teacher is around $80,000. It has a very comprehensive teacher evaluation program, but when the teachers are lacking or showing not enough development in certain area of teaching, they provide the specific professional development pointed at that weakness. So they're working with the teaching population to make them better rather than punish them and creating evaluation and as a system of punitive process. The third thing that I wanted to discuss, I am a doctoral student, and to be a full-time teacher and to do my doctoral degree and continuing to better myself, because we are all into scholarly work. Our job is to teach and to learn. And for them to not then accept our courses for just a little bit improvement or raise in salary. So we are getting hit from quite a few perspectives. And then our professional development has been done through teachers or staff developers who themselves are in the dark. They get a 3-day or a 2-day professional development, and they stand in front of a PowerPoint and they read off of it, and we're supposed to really absorb that. And if we taught in our classrooms in that sense of just presentation, we're going to fail everything.
Mm-hmm.
So this is just an illogical system. We need to come together and we need to hear the teachers rather than decide and announce. Look at our professionalism. Look at our, we are one of the most highly educated populace in the workforce. So give us some respect.
Mm.
Give us some respect and come together on a table and hear the frustration of all of us who are social servants. I myself for 25 years have served the population that is least wanted, children who are deserted, children who are not wanted. And now this system is affecting my humanity. So I'm going to say, oh, you're not going to make enough progress, so I'm not going to teach this population. It is really absurd and inhumane.
And Zori, we're going to have to leave it there. And I hear you getting very emotional about this, as many teachers do, and say that, you know, they're going to do what they're going to do because they feel that it's a moral obligation to do that, but still very much caught in the system. Thank you very much for the call. And we'll take another call, one last call here from Tony calling us from the Big Island. Aloha, Tony. Thanks for your patience.
Aloha. Thank you for addressing this very important topic, and I know teachers appreciate it, and I'm hoping the public is listening as well. I think that's the answer. We get our public involved. We get parents involved. I want to also speak out for a topic you haven't mentioned, is the ELL. We have a high non-English language learner population, so these are non-English-speaking students.
And Tony, we have a very terrible connection. Tony, we have a,
so Tony, I want to make sure
Tony, I'm sorry, we had to bring you down for there because we have a really terrible connection and we're getting a great deal of static in there, and I'm deeply sorry. Sometimes, you know, it just happens. And we're coming to the end of the hour. Now, the four of you who we've been talking to this entire time, Justin Huey and Jessica Kerber, both on the phone, Jessica from Hanalei Elementary School, and Justin from Kinkamehameha III Elementary School on Maui, and in studio here, Mililani High School Social Studies Department Chair Amy Peruso and Corey Rosenley. the Campbell High School nationally certified social studies teacher who we talk to periodically. All of you have been making many of the same points, but really, truly, I would ask you at this point, what happens now? Really, what are you going to do in the face of all of this? Are you all going to stay teachers?
Oh, actually, that wasn't what I was thinking about. I was thinking, Corey said that our next step is to kind of appeal to the humanity or to the reasonableness of the superintendent and the Board of Education. And I really think that that cannot be relied upon. I think that teachers need to keep educating the public and to get parents involved, as one of the callers suggested, and to really raise this question, what kind of educational system do we want to create and what do we need to do that? And
but those questions, Amy, forgive me, we've been talking about that as long as this program has been existing and well, decades before that, and we've been on the air for 15 years. So, I mean, in looking at the frustration that you've all expressed tonight and what we've heard from teachers that they don't even want to teach anymore because it's not fulfilling and it's deeply troubling, what do we do with this? Because it seems like you all are very much pushed up against the wall. And it's going to be you either sort of deal with the system, you hope that maybe somebody will hear a better and have a better moral character and want to do something for teachers and listen to teachers, or you opt out.
And Corey? I say this to teachers, don't quit. Teachers, we need to fight. You know, we will be the most powerful voice for education change. Parents, everyone join in. But teachers, you need to keep on doing what you're doing. Keep on sharing these voices. Keep on sharing these complaints. And together, hopefully, this voice will be loud enough to create change.
So you're really in favor of stick with it and make noise.
We have to stick with it because in the end, we became teachers for the kids. Okay?
I mean, nobody got into this for the money.
Well, that's not a bad thing either. And when you say the teachers didn't get in for the money, of course we came into some for the money.
No, but we not need to get rich off of this. But I mean, you did it because you want to be a teacher.
I want to be a teacher.
It's a calling.
And the days I get most frustrated, I remember that's why I'm doing it for the kids, and that's why we need to continue this. This is why we need the show. This is why we're here today. And we need to keep on having these voices loud enough so that these changes do occur.
All right, Justin and Jessica,
you've
got 30 seconds.
What's going on other places in the country, I witnessed Jesse Hagopian, the Garfield High School teacher in Seattle, organize the teachers in Seattle, and the students refused to take the statewide assessment. And the teachers refused to give the statewide assessment, and they were very successful. Mm-hmm. And they started a movement, and it was a very successful movement. And I actually was able to bring Jesse Hagopian over to Maui to speak to over 1,200 teachers, and he inspired them and gave them hope. And that's what the teachers really need right now is hope. And if we all get together and we all speak as one, we can push back on these draconian decisions that
are
made
Justin,
by non-educators.
And I'm sorry, I got to stop you right there because we're just running out of time, and I want to give Jessica a chance to have 30 seconds to sum up what she feels about this. Jessica?
Basically, I am at a crossroads right now. I have a one-year-old, a six-year-old, and another baby on the way, and normally I was back at work 6 weeks after that with my second. And normally, I live for teaching. This is my passion. I definitely don't do it for the money, that's for sure.
Okay, so life for you is very much up
so
in the air.
And
I'm going to stop you right there because we're out of time. Thank you so much for joining us. Jessica Kerber and Justin Huey, and in studio, Corey Rosenlee and also Amy Peruso. And you too, and thanks to all the teachers who called in and parents too. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. I will be back with you tomorrow morning for the conversation, and we'll also consider having another one of these conversations soon on Town Square. Talk to you soon.